heard quite a bit today about pattern formation associated with water. I would like to talk to you about pattern formation associated with the lack of water. And I want to consider specifically vegetation pattern formation in water-limited systems, or dry lands as they are called. But I want to go beyond the pattern formation aspects and to describe you a study in which we try to link pattern formation to questions related to species richness and biodiversity. And the idea is to use the concept of ecosystem engineers. These are key species that can be plants, microorganisms, animals. Key species that modulate the landscape, redistribute the resources in ways that create habitats for other species. And the main idea is to use our understanding of pattern formation to study special patterns of the ecosystem engineers, which will be plant species, and from this to deduce on habitat creation. The people involved in this study are Erez Gilad, a PhD student of mine, Jos von Hardenberg, who is now in Genoa, Italy, Moshe Shachak, these are both physicists. Moshe Shachak is an ecologist from our university. And there are other two people involved in more restricted aspects of this work, Yair Zarmi from Ben Gurion University and Antonello Provenzale from Torino, Italy. Okay, so I'll start with describing to you the phenomenon of vegetation patterns. You see here an example, and the mechanisms that are at work in this type of systems. I then proceed to mathematical models of vegetation patterns and confront them with some observations. And then I'll proceed to applying these models to the concept of ecosystem engineers, and this will lead us to the last part, relating species richness to pattern formation. What we see here on the right is an aerial photograph of vegetation bands in Niger. The bands are oriented perpendicular to the slope. They are a few tenths of a meter wide. And the main mechanism that is responsible for these and other vegetation patterns is a positive feedback between biomass and water. Biomass is the amount of biological mass. And obviously, if we know that if we the more we water a plant, the more it grows. But the reverse is also true in the sense that the bigger the plant, the more water available to it. And there are at least two positive feedback mechanisms like that. The meaning in the context of this figure, the meaning of this of the positive feedback effect is that any vegetation or any vegetation band gets more water than the average amount. That is, vegetation any unit area of vegetation or vegetated part is getting more than the average amount of water per unit area. And let me illustrate the positive feedback effect that is responsible for these type of patterns on a slope. It is illustrated here, and the main point is that bare areas in arid or dry lands are usually covered by spontaneously covered by crusts. The crust actually can be physical crust just because of the impact of the rain that makes the grains denser and reduce infiltration of water into the ground. Or it can be biological crust formed by microorganisms, most commonly cyanobacteria. These organisms, the cyanobacteria, excrete materials like polysaccharides, which swell in the contact of water, and again, they block the pores of the soil. And this way, they reduce infiltration. So the main effect of the crusts that develop on bare area is to reduce infiltration and generate runoff water. So actually, this vegetation then gets not only the water, the precipitation on the area it occupies, but also the precipitation on the bare area above it. This is the positive feedback effect. Now, these crusts once somebody refer them to you or show them to you, then you see them. Otherwise, it's easy to not to see them. But you can see them in satellite pictures. What you see here is the border area between Egypt and Israel. And you see that the Israeli part is darker. And the reason is that the Israeli part is covered by this biological crust. The reason for that is that in the Israeli side, the areas are restricted either by the army or natural reserves, and shepherds are not allowed in. And this restriction doesn't hold on the Egyptian side. And the cattle simply, by trampling, destroyed the crust. And actually, satellite pictures that followed this area since the peace treaty with Egypt showed the development of this sharp borderline. Now, you can see this crust and this effect also in aerial photographs. You see the Israeli side is darker than the Egyptian side. This is the border, the petrol way. Yeah, well, there are dunes here, actually. The crust have developed on the plain and slopes as well. Okay, so I actually described to you one mechanism of positive feedback, increased infiltration at vegetation bends, and actually it works also for plain area. The fact that there is no infiltration or hardly any infiltration here means that there is a flow of water to the vegetation beds, which serve as sinks. Now, in the vegetation beds, by the way, this crust is not developed because either the cyanobacteria need sunlight and the shedding and the litter that the plants produce block the sunlight. Obviously, the vegetation also eliminate the impact of the rain and so on. There is another positive feedback mechanism which is important, and this is the water uptake by the roots. The bigger the plant, the longer the roots, and the larger the area from which the plant can take up water. Okay. So now I want to proceed to mathematical modeling, and there have been quite a few models in the past few years. I don't have time to review them here, but I want to make a few general comments about modeling in general. Obviously, we want the models to reproduce observed behaviors, but we also want them to make predictions so that we can test the models against experimental data. But beyond these two requirements, there's a third requirement which I consider very important, which is we want the model to shed new light on biological, or in this context, ecological processes. And we'll see how well we are doing with respect to these three requirements. I described to you two models. This is the earlier one, which appeared 2 years ago. It's a two-variable model for plant biomass density, N, and soil water density, W. In the equation for the biomass, we have a growth term, which depends on the amount of soil water. we have a saturation, nonlinear saturation term, which describes the maximum standing biomass. This is the maximum biomass density that the plant can get. For example, a shrub has lower standing biomass than a tree. There is a mortality or a damping due to other processes like human disturbances, such as grazing. And there is a seed dispersal term. In the equation for the soil water, we have the precipitation, which is a parameter. We have a loss term, for example, evaporation, which is reduced by vegetation. We have a water consumption term, mainly due to transpiration. Water transport in the soil, which is basically based on Darcy's law. And this is a term that models the positive feedback between biomass and water, and actually do not really distinguish between the two positive feedback effects. But what it says that if we have a hump in the biomass, then it accumulates water from the surrounding. Well, we chose this form because it appears to fit better experimental data that we had. Let me describe to you solutions of this model. The simplest solutions are uniform stationary solutions. There are two such solutions, bare state, in which n is equal to zero everywhere. And this solution exists for all precipitation values, but it's unstable for a precipitation higher than some critical value. Let's look at this diagram. What we have here is the spatial average over the whole system of the biomass versus the precipitation. This is kind of a buffification diagram. And so the bare state solution is this line, and it's stable up to PC, and here it's unstable. The other uniform solution is a fully vegetated soil. This is described by this branch, and this solution is stable for precipitation higher than some critical value. In between, we have pattern states, spots at low precipitation, stripes at intermediate precipitations, and holes or gaps at higher precipitations. Just to illustrate the formation of, say, spots at this value of precipitation from random perturbations around the unstable bare state, here is how they develop. Now, if I increase precipitation, then I get stripes. If I go back to this value again, but now start with a different initial condition, start with a spot, it grows, but then develops into a ring. We can understand this like in the field as in the following way. As the vegetation patch grows, those plants in the middle feel more and more competition for water because their roots extend to regions that are already that are becoming occupied by other plants. And so they dry out in the middle. If I continue, I get the same type of asymptotic pattern as here because it's the same parameter. Okay, now there's another. So actually, one prediction of the model is a sequence of states as we increase precipitation, bare soil, spots, stripes, gaps, and uniform vegetation. This is one prediction. And the other property that comes out from the model is that there are ranges of precipitation where more than one state is stable. For example, bare soil and spots and stripes and holes and uniform coverage. If I look at this area and make a close-up on this, and now I'm plotting not the special average of the biomass, but rather the amplitude of the biomass, then I get, this is the branch of the spot pattern. This is calculated numerically, and this is the bare soil solution, and we have here a precipitation range where both of them are stable. We should have also an unstable branch, but we didn't calculate it. We saw PDEs. But this already sheds light on a phenomenon that actually exists not only in dry lands. This is the phenomenon of desertification, which is defined to be an irreversible decrease in biological productivity caused by climatic changes or human disturbances. And here we can actually understand, or the model gives a new understanding or sheds a new light on this phenomenon in the following way. We can suppose we have this value of precipitation in some environments with this value of precipitation, and the soil is covered by a spot pattern. Now imagine there is a drought, and the drought leads to precipitation values where the vegetation patterns no longer exist. So the system must converge to the bare soil. Now suppose the drought is over and we are back to the same original environmental conditions, but this is what the vegetation does not recover. We are at the bare soil. We need a particularly rainy season in order to complete the hysteresis loop. So actually this tells us that or the interpretation according to this model is that desertification and recovery is basically a hysteresis loop. Well, we use both Neumann boundary conditions and periodic, and it doesn't affect really the behavior. Okay, let me show you a few observations. What we see here are patches of Pua bulbusa. It's a type of perennial grass. This is observed in the northern Negev in Israel. It's an area with about 200 millimeters annual, mean annual rainfall. Here we see simulations of the model, and we see here we see these pairs here and here and here and here, which look similar to these, which are undergoing splitting. We don't know if this is the case. I mean, this is we just see it at one point in time, but we do see rings, and we were very pleased by that. This is another perennial grass, Paspalum vaginatum, which we learned is very common today in golf courses because it's resistant to, or it can grow on salty soil, and they can grow it near the sea. And but it has one disadvantage. It shows these patterns when it gets dry, or when the precipitation drops, or when it becomes colder. And this is something that the those who grow this grass don't like, but I like it very much. And here we see a close-up, which shows something that looks like labyrinth. And actually, if we look closely, you can see all the three patterns that we see here, spots, stripes, and holes or gaps. This is the second mathematical model, which is more elaborate, it contains now three variables. The biomass density, we call it now B rather than N. But then we split the water into soil water and surface water. Actually, there were two other groups that did it before us, except that the equation for H is not phenomenological, or it's basically derived from shallow water theory. But there is another important ingredient in these equations, which is which is the following. This model actually distinguishes between the two positive feedback mechanisms. One mechanism, which is due to infiltration, increased infiltration at vegetation bands, is actually included in this infiltration term I, which is given by this form. This form actually we took from this reference, and it says that if the parameter F is a small parameter, it means that bare area infiltrate less water than vegetated ones. I'll come back to this way and show it also to this form and also show it graphically. And the other important ingredient is the water uptake by roots, which is modeled by these two kernel integral terms. And basically the kernels represent the root system. So for example, this term here tells us that the or models the fact that the growth rate of biomass depends on the amount of soil water, but not only on the amount of soil water at the plant location, but also in the area around to which the roots of this plant extend to. Okay, so and the kernel is given by a Gaussian term, where the width of the Gaussian represents the extent of the root system, and it depends on the biomass. So the bigger the biomass, the longer the roots, and the larger the water uptake. So actually this term accounts for the other positive feedback effect, the water uptake by roots. This term here represents the fact that at a given point R, the water change is, or the water consumption is not only due to the plant that sits at that point, but also a plant at that point that has roots that extend to this point. And in this equation, in the third equation, H is the height of the surface water, and zeta is the topography function, and so actually we can put here any topography we want. Now, the second model reproduces the same solutions of model one. We have the bare state and the fully vegetated state. This is the bare state solution, losing stability at some critical value. This is the uniform coverage solution, which is stable beyond above some larger critical value. And in between, we have vegetation bands, and here we see results of linear stability analysis of the fully uniformly covered soil, which shows that we have a finite wave number instability that leads to patterns, to stationary patterns.
What is the datum? The datum was a topography. Is that just one?
This is for plain. For pen. I'll show you later on.
Wait.
Okay. So now let's proceed to ecosystem engineers. This is a concept that was introduced 9 years ago by Jones, Slotin, and Shahak. These are three ecologists. Ecosystem engineers are key species which modulate the landscape, organize the flow of resources, and strongly affect the number of other species in the ecosystem. And one example I'm sure you are all familiar with, these are beavers that build dams. They do it for their own protection, but in this way they provide habitats for many other species. The ecosystem engineers that I want to focus here are plants, shrubs, and cyanobacteria. Actually, I'll focus on the cooperative effect of these two, and this cooperative effect leads to engineering in the sense that the cyanobacteria form soil crust, which reduce the infiltration. So here we have a crust and we don't have infiltration. or hardly any infiltration. Shrubs prevent the growth of soil crust and increase infiltration, so the cooperative effect of both is to accumulate soil water underneath the shrub, the engineer, which can be for the benefit of other species. There's another property which is very important when we consider species richness, which is the resilience of this system to disturbances. A pair of ecosystem engineers is such that the shrub has long enough roots so that even if the crust is broken and there is infiltration everywhere, it doesn't accumulate water, but it survives because of its long roots and the other positive feedback effect. Okay, so now we want to use this model to study engineering and resilience properties of this pair of ecosystem engineers. This is the second model. And we want now to associate B with the biomass of the shrub, the engineer. And we want to demand these two requirements. Sigma 1, which is the parameter appearing here, is large, and F, which is the parameter that appears here, is small. And the meaning of these two requirements is the following. If sigma 1 large, it means that the shrub is capable of developing long roots as its biomass grows, and therefore to survive dry conditions. This gives the system resilience. And the condition F is much smaller than 1, means that actually it models the existence of the crust, because it leads to this profile of the infiltration as a function of the biomass. For bare soil, where the biomass is zero, because F is a small parameter, the infiltration is low, and as the biomass increases, the infiltration increases. And actually this gives this allows for the engineering effect. Okay, so let me show you solutions of the model that with these conditions. And we'll see whether it actually at all can produce this effect, the engineering effect. So we choose sigma 1 large, and we consider F to be much smaller than unity. So we have a shrub and crust with this profile of the infiltration. And these are the solutions of the model, a numerical solution, of course. The solid line is the biomass, and the dotted line, this one, is the soil water. And we see that it does leads to accumulation of soil water under the vegetation patch. So we have this engineering effect. Now if we remove the crust by increasing F to unity, if F is unity, then I is alpha H everywhere. And in this case, we see that there is no soil water accumulation under the shrub, but the shrub persists, survives, and this is because we chose sigma 1 large enough. And this gives the resilience of the system, because if the crust is broken by some disturbances, then the shrub survives, and then when the crust recovers, and it does recover spontaneously, then the system recovers and can again form accumulate water. Now, the soil water accumulation underneath the vegetation patch may exceed the soil water level of a bare soil at the same precipitation. The level of a bare soil is given by the dotted line. This is the level of water in the absence of shrub. And we see that the existence of the shrub leads to accumulation of water beyond that level. So this leads to habitat creation. Species that need this extra amount of water to survive can survive under the due to the existence of the shrub. And I should say that we are now studying the models and trying to find the parameters that optimize this this effect, maximize the amount of accumulated water, and at the same time not damaging the resilience of the system. And but the model is a good tool for studying these effects. So far, we studied the conditions that favor the introduction of new species, like conditions that lead to accumulation of salt water. So it tells us that weaker species can survive those who need this extra amount of water. But this approach doesn't tell us anything about what determines the number of species that can grow here. And this brings us to the link between pattern formation and species richness. And I should say here that this is a research in progress, and from now on I'm more sharing with you ideas that we have, and we are already working on them, but the results are very preliminary, and we have more ideas than results so far. So according to the niche theory in ecology, the more diverse the landscape, the more habitats or growth niches it provides, and the richer the species. In our context, landscape diversity is determined by the special patterns of the shrub, and the model suggests at least two mechanisms of pattern diversity. One is biostability of state, the fact that we have various precipitation ranges where more than one state of pattern or pattern coexists. For example, we have this range here where we have coexistence of bare soil and spots. And in this range, we can actually form a variety of patterns, mixed patterns involving both bare area and spots. We don't know if these are asymptotic patterns, but what is more important practically, that these are, even if they are not asymptotic, they are long-lived. Okay, long-lived compared to the time to the growth timescale. In the area, in the range where spots coexist with stripes, we can get this type of pattern, and so on. Another possible mechanism is especially chaotic patterns, but we haven't studied that yet. Maybe I should make a comment about why should disordered patterns of soil water, which is the resource here, provide more habitats than ordered patterns. This becomes evident when you consider the full complexity of the system, taking into account species interactions or food-web relations and so on. And let me give you just a very simple example that can illustrate it. Imagine we have two interacting species. Now, I'm talking now about those species that are introduced due to the habitats that the engineers form, okay? Suppose we have two such species, one stronger than the other, in the sense that if both grow, the stronger one wins. But the weak species grows faster. Now, if we have, let's consider first a rather disordered pattern of the soil water. In regions where we have a large amount of soil water, both grow, and the stronger one wins, and we are left with the strong species. In regions where we have a small amount of water, then the weak species grows first because it grows faster, and it may exhaust all the water before the stronger species has a chance to grow. So in these regions, we can find only the weak species. If we have an ordered, really periodic pattern, we would have either the strong species if the amplitude is large, or weak species if the amplitude is small, but not both of them. Okay, so this is just an example, and One can think of many other examples. Okay, this is the last topic that I want to address here is species loss events. This is a rather hot topic today because the past 20 or 30 years are considered to be a period of unprecedented loss of species and habitats due to environmental changes and human disturbances. And the model suggests at least two mechanisms for species loss events. One mechanism is actually something that I don't think it's very novel. I mean, I believe ecologists came up with it. Partial or complete crust removal by human disturbances and reduction in accumulated salt water. We saw already these two pictures. So if we remove, when we have a crust, we have accumulation of salt water. If we remove the crust, then we don't have accumulation of salt water, and those species that need, that were introduced by the accumulation of salt water, disappear. And by, well, by human activity, actually, I mean this type of thing. And the other mechanism is actually, I think it's, to the best of my understanding and knowledge, it's novel. It's a species loss due to transition between states or patterns that, of the engineer that involve habitat loss. Obviously, if we have environmental conditions, they affect the, all the species, okay? But here we say, these changes, environmental changes, may affect the state of the engineer. And if the new state produced less habitats, then it leads to species loss. And I want to give you one example. And this is a transition from banded patterns to dashed patterns. Here I come to the slope. If we look at our observations, these are observations that were made in Nigeria. This is the same pattern that I've shown you before. These people actually mapped different patterns at different slope and different precipitation values. So let's focus on this transition from this to this, which occurs for a given slope by decreasing the rainfall or precipitation. We see here a transition from banded vegetation to what they call dashed patterns, okay? And this this type of transition is also reproduced by the model models. This is the again the same kind of bufflication diagram, bare soil state and uniform coverage, and in between pattern states, except that now because of the anisotropy that introduced by the slope, we see predominantly banded vegetations, but if the precipitation becomes really small, we have a transition from banded vegetation, which is the blue line here, to dashed patterns, which is the green line here. Now, think about the water that accumulates at near these vegetation patches. In this case, where we have vegetation bands, all the runoff water is captured by the vegetation bands. Whereas here, we have leakage. Runoff water can leak out of the system. So the amount of water accumulated on the average at each vegetation patch or area or unit area here, as compared to here, will be much smaller. Okay? So here we have loss of habitat, and the significant point is that we don't need to have a big change in precipitation. If we are close to this critical point, close to the transition point between the two patterns, a slight change, drop in the precipitation leads to a big species loss event. Okay, let me conclude, and I'll go now to the three requirements that I introduced in the beginning. The new model, the two models that I described, reproduce observed phenomena, those phenomena that we are aware of, like patterns that appear like labyrinths, rings, spots, stripes, holes. The models make specific predictions. For example, this sequence of states along the rainfall gradient as we increase precipitation from bare soil to spots, to stripes, to gaps or holes, to, and to uniform vegetation. And by stability ranges, the fact that at the same precipitation we can have more than one stable state. And the model also shed the new light on ecological processes or phenomena, desertification and recovery. We saw that we can understand it as hysteresis loop, and this gives the meaning of the irreversibility that people attribute to this phenomenon. And a novel mechanism of species loss events due to transitions of the ecosystem engineer that involve a loss of habitats. And I think I'll stop here. Thank you.